On this episode of the Union Podcast, we'll be speaking with Scott Rogers about how to develop your public persona.
Hey, this is Scott Rogers. You're listening to Union Podcast. Live strong and prosper.
Levanta, fuerza, y prospera.
Any information in this podcast should first be reviewed by the corresponding professional, whether that's medical, financial, or legal, before applying it to your life. The views presented here may or may not be those of the host, guest, Union of Muscle, Black Hat Management, or its affiliates. The winner this week, according to page views on theunionpodcast.com for the week of July 20th to July 27th, is the United States. Coming in second, and actually these three countries tied for second, is Brazil, Ukraine, and South Africa. The actual lead that the U.S. had this week over the other countries was quite large. 25 few page lead. Canada, Germany, India, Mexico, and Portugal are tied for third. I noticed that Saudi Arabia did get a page view at one point this week, but I didn't see them in these final results. So looks like, thanks for tuning in, guys. Get a few more, and maybe we'll get you in the winner's circle. Okay, thanks for tuning into the Union Podcast. I know that lifting strong can help you no matter where you're at in the world, and no matter what else is going around you, that if you focus on doing your best and doing things with purpose, you will be lifting strong and you will prosper. Do you have a favorite Union Podcast episode? Well, it looks like some of you do. I'm looking at the all-time registry of podcast episodes. In the lead is episode 15 with Giovante. Coming in second is episode 4. That was the one with Katrina Starskaya? Stars in the Sky, that's what I call her. Stars in the Sky. And Angelica George Isles. Coming in next was episode 8, Groove Into Fitness with Groovy Judy. Episode 12, Gary By. Episode 6, Emily. Episode 3 was David Andrews. Episode 7, Rubber Arm Muscle Rub. Episode 16, Andrea Cox. Episode 14, Banting. Thank you for listening. And if you have a favorite episode, get others to listen to it. Go ahead and recommend that to your family, friends, and all those who could benefit from the information shared. Lift strong and prosper. I'm here with Scott Rogers. I ran into Scott online. He had some great advice when it came to working in front of the video camera. So I contacted Scott and said, what is it that you might be able to bring to maybe some of our listeners who are trying to build that public persona? Yeah, Scott said he might have some great ideas for us. Scott, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
My name's Scott Rogers. I have actually acting studios in both Portland, Oregon and Honolulu, Hawaii. And I teach at both, which keeps me awfully busy. I actually Skype in to wherever I'm not at the time. And I teach via Skype into a classroom full of actors, so that's kind of what I do. Been training actors for, more than 25 years. Worked on different TV shows as an acting coach, working with series regulars, as well as day performers and guest stars. So my job has been almost entirely, for the last 20 years or so, helping performers look better on camera, look more truthful. So that's been what I've been doing for the last 20 years or so.
When you Skype in, I guess that kind of does set up a good scenario right there to see how someone really comes across on camera, because they're
exactly
on camera. Okay.
It's worked out actually I thought it was a convenience thing, but it's worked out much better than I thought, because I'm actually seeing them on camera the whole time, the whole class. So as I said, it's a, for example, my Honolulu class, I teach every Wednesday night. I have two cameras in the room and then a big screen, you know, monitor so everyone can see me. And literally, it's the weirdest feeling as I'm sitting there talking and I see somebody whisper to somebody else and I go, hey, could you guys not talk while I'm talking? And they sit up like, oh, wait, I forgot you could see us. You
right.
Know? I can watch scenes. When they get up to do a scene, they have to stay within the confines of the camera where
right.
I can see, which is a very real obstacle that you deal
right.
with all the time on camera. So, yeah, those kinds of things I think are really good. Plus, I'm seeing them in fairly tight shots, which, as I think actors are beginning to learn, in the tighter shots, which are, I call them the money shots, right?
Right.
And they're the ones that really count. Movement works in exactly the opposite way that it would if you were giving a speech in front of a live audience. Movement would help you in that scenario. But on camera, especially in a tighter shot, any movement tends to take away from what you're trying to get across. We believe you less, we get less of your emotions and stuff. And it, so it's actually the opposite, the complete opposite of the way it would be in a public speech.
Now, with these classes, do you find that there's kind of an upper limit of how many people can be in the class that you're doing satellite-wise?
Well, you know, I haven't really hit, like, for me, what I think are limits yet. I mean, you know, Honolulu and Portland, Oregon are not the largest cities in the country, and they also don't have the most actors, right? It's not like a New York or an L.A. or Chicago or even a San Francisco. My classes, I think the high end is around 20 to 25 would be the most that I've had.
Okay.
Certainly since I've started Skyping, but it's completely manageable in those numbers. So, yeah, hasn't really been a problem.
Huh, that's interesting, because as in the fitness industry, we also are starting to do a little bit more of the online consultations and a bit more of the satellite coaching and things like that. So it's really interesting to see how, especially because when you're doing coaching, you can get into the area where you need to demonstrate different techniques, check to see how their technique is as far as what they're doing in their lifts. It's kind of interesting to hear the success that you're having with teaching classes in a satellite way.
And these are classes, as I say. I also do quite a lot of Skype coaching, and I use Skype as a generic now, like
right.
Kleenex, I guess.
Right.
Yeah, but we can use, you know, FaceTime, Google Plus, whatever is working better on those days. But I also do a lot of individual Skype coaching, and I think that would be more viable. The reason that I do the Skype classes is because with acting, you need the give and take of other people in the room. I kind of have to Skype into an existing class. Once you lose that dynamic, like everybody Skyping in from their homes, it doesn't quite work as well. Some things like your stuff, the physical fitness stuff, I would think might. I know someone that teaches belly dancing.
Okay.
And she has, you know, and it's physical, but everybody is in their own home doing their own thing. And so she can have, she usually has groups, I think, of up to like 6 people, 7 people. But she's got a picture of each one of them, and she can really give them focus on their technique and what they're, you know, doing right and wrong and that kind of thing.
Nice.
Kind of interesting.
And the students, how do they react besides the first time you having to remind them a few times that you can see them? Are they, how do they feel
well,
about
that doesn't seem to go away, because they seem to forget that a lot. but actually, you know, the response that I get the most when I tell somebody about it,
right,
everybody that would be listening to this, I suppose, is, oh, you teach via Skype. That's interesting.
Right.
Which is kind of a tepid response, but the cool thing is that when they do it, and so I just offer them a money-back guarantee. I say, if you don't like it, you don't pay, doesn't cost you a penny, you know, don't worry about it, just come check it out. And I haven't had to refund anybody because it works really, really well. And people constantly are coming up to me, either online or in person when I do hit town, and they're saying, I really never thought it was going to be this cool, but it works really, really well. Because, I mean, there's the give and take. I can talk to them back and forth. I can critique their scenes. I can see the expressions in their eyes and their faces and pretty much everything I would be doing in person, I can do. So, yeah, it's been a surprise, I think, for most people.
Nice. How did it end up that you have two studios on different land masses?
Well, I just wanted to open something up that was far away. No, I left L.A., God, I don't know, 25-something years ago. Really wanted to get away from there to raise my kids. We picked Hawaii, my wife and I, because I had lived there as a child and growing up. And so we moved there, opened the studio, ran it for about a dozen, 13 years, something like that. And I hate to say it, but I missed my kids because they moved to the mainland. My daughter's in L.A., and my son had moved to Brooklyn. He ended up deciding he was going to move to Portland. And so I said, you know, if I'm going to open a second studio somewhere on the mainland, because I wanted to do this, I chose Portland. A number of other reasons, you know, the arts are great, strong here, and they have union theaters, which is just wonderful for a city of this size, great culture and all that. But bottom line, the selling point for me was my son was going to be here, so I took a chance to live near him again, which would be nice.
No one can argue with the reason being family.
Yeah, there you go. And I'm hoping to open up another school somewhere else. I don't have any idea where. It's going to take me about another year to get these two running smoothly. You know, I am looking for another place. I think it's really easy to do this way. I mean, if I can get an assistant on the ground in another city, then I can teach a class a night, a class a week via Skype from wherever I am.
You know, there's a lot of people looking for a lot of things out here on the East Coast. But
yeah,
our podcast goes all over the world, which is fantastic. So I'm always grateful for our listeners who are listening in, whether that's in Ukraine or South Africa or Australia or India or wherever you guys are listening in. I'm always grateful for
Absolutely.
You guys turning into the podcast.
That's just something that I'm blown away by constantly with this whole Skype world and the individual Skype coaching and stuff. I've had clients from half of the places you just named, as well as places that, you know, I would never, I mean, Belgium, but what about, like, Papua New Guinea, you know? I mean, just some places that I would never have expected to have people pursuing acting with this new world media, I guess. It's possible. Anything's possible. I'm sure your show is listened to literally all over the world.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, definitely.
That's great.
This is a fitness podcast, and a lot of people get into fitness because they're trying to create this good physique that then they might be able to take into a show business realm, or they're into the show business already and they're trying to hone their physique so that way they can look better on camera. What are some of the things they need to start doing as far as building that public persona besides just looking great?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I have a student, he's a new student in my Honolulu class, and I'll just go with his first name. His name is Jake.
Okay.
And he's a bodybuilder, a very handsome guy. You look at him and you just see this huge mass of muscle and a good-looking face, you know? And,
right.
And he wants to act, too. So in the beginning, just like a pretty girl. You're a pretty girl. You want to act. It's the same thing. Your looks will open some doors and close others.
Okay.
It'll help you in some things, mostly the shallower things like commercials and things like that, where it doesn't require a lot of skill, you'll get those gigs because you have the right look. For commercials and industrial things like that, that's just about all you need. So it's a good thing. On the downside, you know, you don't tend to get taken as seriously.
Well, I find, too, that there's a lot of this trend, it seems, you know, in media to go this more natural person route that anyone
you know,
who has
phenomenal
looks is not a real person anymore, which is really, you know, disturbing for us who may be complimented here and there on our looks and our physiques. You know, now we're not real people anymore, which you know, I don't...
It's a little strange. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's always going to be a question of what Hollywood wants, what's in Hollywood, you know. And yes, there's a lot of, quote, real people. They don't want too pretty, too beautiful. What they like, actually, and this is a good hint for people that do have a really good look. What you do is, I call it uglifying, okay? And this has been, for many years, this has been a favorite of Hollywood. When they choose somebody, when they cast somebody to be a plain character, you know, normal, whatever, what they do is they do still choose really, really beautiful people. And then they throw some glasses on them, or they change their hair a little bit so it's not as flattering, or they do things like that, uglify them.
Okay.
And I think that sometimes, you know, bodybuilders and people that are really, really focused on their look, that's a step they can take to appeal to the more normal. I mean, I look at Jake, and I have had several in my, you know, in my time teaching fitness people and bodybuilders and such. The similarity is that you're so focused on that and how you look and everything that sometimes you have to back away from it. But the other thing that I found with fitness people in general is that they tend to make really good students for acting. They come into it thinking, okay, I just have to say these words and smile or look sad and I can act. And then they realize that it's not quite that easy if they want to act.
Right.
If they just want to host, then it's really more a matter of their personality and fixing small things they do wrong on camera. Moving too much, your eyes moving, your eyes darting around, you know, little things, you blink too much, little things that are usually pretty easy to fix. They're just, you know, technical things. The fitness people that come into class, they understand training, and that's what a lot of actors strong actors don't understand. And so they don't work because they don't understand the value of training. And, you know, the example I give with technique, with acting technique, is I compare it to you know, any sport. You know, you do sit-ups to get into shape to do a sport or an activity.
Right.
You know, the sit-ups aren't in and of themselves an end to what you're doing. They are simply a way to get into really good shape so that you can surf or ski or do whatever it is that you do, you know. And acting is the same way. There are a lot of techniques that require you to do the what I call sit-ups of the technique. And a lot of actors don't do them, but I find that a lot of times these fitness people come in and they totally get that concept. So they start working on it and they start seeing results quick.
Right. For those who are just getting into fitness, what you can often realize, and what I hope you realize, is that when you're going to the gym and you are lifting weights, that's not where you're building the muscle. You're actually tearing the muscle down at that point. And so when you are going to the gym, that's not where the growth happens. That's actually what triggers the growth, but you're not going to see the growth, at least not in real terms. I mean, you might get a pump and then you might get blood pumping through that muscle and it might look big for that moment, but it's not actually going to grow, or your body's not actually going to change unless you feed it right and then sleep. Not rest, sleep. So we also need to get away from the idea that sitting down in front of your TV is going to help you recover. It's not. Your body is not doing the same things it does when it's sleeping as when you're sitting in front of the TV. As much as we love entertainment and, you know, maybe even want to be a part of that, it doesn't help you your muscles recover.
Well, in an interesting side note, I would just point out that I've worked in TV and made my living in TV for the last 20 years, and yet I haven't even had a television in the house in most of that, if not all of that time. Watching is not the same as doing, and zoning out in front of the TV is not the same as sleeping, so you're right.
Now, if someone wants to develop that public persona, they might get a coach like you, an acting coach, to kind of help them build that public persona. Is building a public persona, does that mean anytime you go out in public, you need to put on a facade? Are you changing who you are as a person to eventually have this full-fledged public persona? Or what's going on if somebody really wants to engage in creating that good public persona?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think you don't want to do that, because then what happens is you end up becoming a cliche. I think what makes people interesting and what draws us to public people is their uniqueness. And if you give that up and try to be somebody else, I think that ends up backfiring. You end up with a very boring cliche of a person.
Are there things you should avoid doing to maybe not maybe alienate certain crowds of people, or do you just say,
I think sure. You want to learn when to bite your tongue, when not to go overboard. I think that I hate to sound old, but there used to be, before Facebook, there used to be some standards of things you wouldn't discuss. And so unless you were a politician, you didn't really discuss your politics, because you're bound to alienate 50% of the people out there,
right.
You know, no matter what your view is. If you want to run for office or if you want to support somebody, then that's your call, then go for it. But then you got to also accept the slings and arrows that come at you for it. So I would think that, you know, sex, religion, politics are the three things that you'd want to avoid if possible. Again, unless you're intentionally trying to, support some position or something, and then that's you, and you should do it. But you got to expect that it's going to piss off half the people.
Right, and even if you're in fitness and you're trying to develop this person, a lot of times it's easy if you can hone in on a certain thing that you're specializing at. So we've had guests come on who say they specialize with people with thyroid problems, or they specialize in raw veganism like we had on last week. That if you're specializing in those things, there's going to be people who maybe disagree with some of the raw vegan ideas and are ketogenic people.
Sure.
And we've had the ketogenic people come on, and there may be raw vegans that disagree with them. And so I think even in the fitness industry, if you have something that you're passionate about, you do have to realize that there are going to be people who are giving you pushback in that area, and try not to take it personally. Try not to make it a big deal. If you make it a big deal, then it's gonna really distract from what you're really trying to do. If you're trying to push, you know, one type of exercise program over another, if you get caught up in that feedback, that negative feedback, and you focus all on that, it actually ends up, in my view, taking away from the message, because you spend so much time fighting something that you don't spend as much time building up the good about what you're trying to do.
Exactly right. You go off message. I do a lot of coaching for people that are not acting or interested in acting. They're simply interested in public speaking, sometimes crisis management, things like that. And that, you don't want to let that get you off your message. What I tell my clients is have your three message points, the three things that you really want to get across the most, and just keep coming back to them, because that otherwise you do. You get lost in the minutiae. You start getting into arguments over things that really are not essential.
If you find yourself getting in that position, how do you bring yourself back on track?
Well, you know, I hate to say it, but politicians tend to be the best at this.
Right.
They don't answer the questions that they ask themselves. You know, you'll ask a question, you know, what's the weather like? And they'll start talking about whatever their message points are. Well, you know, the weather causes this, and that's why we, you know, all vote this way, whatever.
Right.
So the thing to do is to just consistently bring it back to your message and what you're trying to get across. That's the way to handle those kinds of situations.
But do you stand the risk of then coming off a little phony, as some politicians do when they don't answer the question?
I think that that's the skill of the individual.
Okay.
To do it in a way that is placating the person asking the question or challenging you or whatever.
Right.
And giving them some of the information, but always gently but firmly steering the conversation back to where you want it to be. And it is a challenge, especially when you're dealing with the press in a crisis management situation, because they are trying to get information that you're not willing or ready to share at that point. And so, yeah, it definitely takes some skill and practice.
Right. Oftentimes, if my wits are about me, I'll use the "but what I found" phrase. And so I'll quickly answer the question that's being asked to the best of my ability, and I may say after that, "But what I've found is that's such and such and such and such." And so it kind of gives you a leeway to kind of change the subject without totally negating or dismissing what the other person had brought up in the conversation.
Right, absolutely. And I think it's important to do that. There are certain phrases in my experience,
right,
things like that can help you to do that. And exactly right, exactly right. And we share that with the clients all the time, skillful ways that you can guide the conversation back. But yeah, you don't want to diss people. You don't want to ignore their questions or sound like a cold, uncaring politician. You want to sound like the warm, ingratiating politicians. And then, in reality, they're all doing the same thing.
Right.
Some of them are much better at it.
Right. Right. Yeah, so podcasting is starting to take off, but the YouTube videos are fairly hot in the fitness industry, and there's a chance that a lot of people in fitness are starting to create YouTube videos and are starting to, of course, post their workout pictures online to show what they've accomplished. So they want to maintain a true to them personality, but sometimes they have yet to figure out who they are, and sometimes it's even easy to watch other YouTube videos and kind of adopt some of the personas that are already out there just with your own audience. How do you go about kind of stabilizing that public persona if you're not really sure who you are or how to do that? How do you strengthen your own character?
Honestly, I mean, that's a tough question, but
okay.
I'll take a shot at it.
Okay, all right.
And I don't think there's an easy answer. I think that one mistake that I see frequently on YouTube with all kinds of different disciplines is that people are really quick to post what they shoot. And my feeling, and I say this to actors constantly, actors depend upon what we call reel, which is basically clips of their work, scenes that they've shot and films or whatever, TV shows, edited together so you can see really quickly in a minute or so a sampling of their work. Unfortunately, especially in the beginning of an actor's career, you know, they don't have much work to show.
Right.
So the very first things that they get they throw into their reel. And the same thing happens on YouTube with people right. from many disciplines that they shoot it, they stick it up there, and all they can say is, you gotta know what good is. You don't want to be putting stuff out there that really isn't good just because it's done. Or more often what I see is it's new. I constantly see people replacing their reel with new stuff that they've shot, but the old stuff was much better quality, and they let go of that because this is new. And I think that people on YouTube are really quick to do that, really quick to post whatever they shoot, no matter how they look. I just think you really back off of that and try not to do that. Also, I would suggest learning a little bit about editing, because I think that there's a lot that you can do editing the video before uploading it to make it look better, more flattering for you, whatever. There's a lot of things you can do. Learning how things are shot, better angles. I'm sure that that's really important. I mean, I do work with a lot of dancers, too. And I think there's a lot of similarity there. You're dealing with poses and a look and things like that. And, yeah, I mean, angles that you shoot, frame size, editing, slowing stuff down or speeding it up. I mean, all kinds of things can really help the way that it looks. So, I mean, I think a good editing class or something might behoove people.
Posing, there is some posing done in bodybuilding, especially when you get into the competition area. Posing becomes a very important part of your training as a competitive bodybuilder and a competitive fitness person. And so there are a lot of YouTube videos out there, people either practicing their posing or trying to demonstrate posing. So I think they could definitely take some of those ideas that you just gave, especially about editing. Because I understand there a lot of times they're just putting it up there so that way they can almost just watch it. And they say, well, you know, if I'm going to watch it, I can let other people watch. They're not too bashful about that. But if they did a little bit of editing work on it, they could actually make it into something that's beneficial to them and not just for practical use.
I think you're right. I don't think people really realize the extent, the power that editing has. And that's not to say that shooting isn't just as important, because it is. I mean, dancers do what they call bevel, which makes them look, female dancers, makes them their lines look much, much more attractive. They look more shapely but thinner and, you know, all kinds of things. You can bevel to your heart's content, but if the camera is shooting you from the side or some other angle, it's not going to look as good. And the same goes, I would think, for bodybuilding, is the angle can affect a lot of things, and not just from side to side, but up and down, too.
Right.
It can make you look bigger in some areas, smaller in other areas, and, you know, and that can help or hinder you. But as far as editing goes, you know, when I tell my students that are interested in filmmaking, not just acting, but making films, which is similar to what we're talking about,
right.
There's three films that are made when you make a film. There's the one that's written, there's the one that's shot, and there's the one that's cut or edited.
Right.
Literally, any one of those areas can make or break the film, and I've seen it many times with many different films where two of the film is written really well, or actually, I can think of an Academy Award-winning film, in fact, that won Best Picture a number of years ago. It was really poorly written. It was really poorly shot. The editors didn't know what to do with it. The film wasn't even shot. There were things missing, huge gaps in story.
Whoa.
They did an amazingly creative job cutting it together, and they took Best Picture.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. And the director went on his next film to make a terrible, you know, it was like the biggest money-losing film in history at that point, because they gave him so much power because he won the Academy Award.
Right.
And the reality was, it was the editors that won the Academy Award. not him, and they found that out on his next movie. So yeah, editing can really do a lot.
He should have taken the same editors with him.
But he didn't, because he thought, well, I don't think they would have worked with him, frankly. that wouldn't have happened.
So I think that goes to show, too, that if you do end up hiring other people or getting other people to help you with your editing and other work, that you give them credit for the work that they've put in, and you don't let that bolster you up falsely and start taking credit for things that aren't you, because then you could fall flat on your face the next time and not have those same people there to help clean up when you're not as great on every level as you'd like to be.
Yeah, and that's what happened to this director. I think he did one other movie after that, and that was it.
So
won the Academy Award.
If someone gets a chance to get to your website, and we're going to put a link in the show notes so that way they can come to it, what are some of the classes that you offer? I'm hearing you talking about acting and dancers, and what are some of the options they have?
Well, let me be clear. I certainly don't teach dance.
Okay.
That would be a scary proposition.
Okay.
No, but I work with, actually, well, dancers are very much like athletes in the sense that, I mean, you know, obviously the physical fitness and things, but also in terms of a rather short career. I mean, if you want to look at it realistically,
right.
And that's what I do, is I'm a realist. Dancer, by the time they're 24, 25, they are on the road downhill. I mean, they're not going to get any better physically.
Right.
They can keep working, and they can, if they're really, really on top of their training and on those kinds of regimens. But honestly, you know, injuries happen, and age happens. And
right.
So that's why I think I work with a lot, because these people are used to performing, and the one natural progression seems to be for many of them in both fitness and sports and dance and modeling, frankly, because they all share that
right.
Short career span. Yeah, they tend to come over to acting because they realize eventually that not only can you work until you're 30 or 40, but there are many actors that work into their 60s, 70s, you know, and beyond sometimes.
Right.
It gives them somewhere else to go. So I think it's a good thing.
So you have online one-on-one classes if they're in Hawaii or...
Yeah, I don't really do... So I have my two classes in Hawaii and in Portland, and then individual, I don't really do private teaching as much as I do private coaching.
Okay.
So, and I like to be clear about that difference, because teaching, I think, that's certainly for acting, is best done in a classroom. Coaching is something that I do for actors as well as non-actors. I have clientele that are lawyers, business people, executives, military, doctors. I coach chiropractors and dentists and marine biologists because they have to speak in public, and
okay.
Sometimes on camera, sometimes in public. And so I have individual coaching that I'll do for them as well as actors, but it has to be for something specific. So for an audition that they have coming up, or for a doctor giving a speech, or a lawyer giving a speech, or doing a TV show where they get interviewed, and, you know, things like that. And the last time it was a disaster, so they really want to do a better job, that kind of thing. So I can look at their tape, and then I can talk on Skype with them. It ends up being really productive half an hour or hour of their time.
Right, and you don't do any of the speech writing or anything. They bring that.
Yeah, I don't write speeches, no. And it would be silly for me to, because I'm not an expert in any of their disciplines. You know, I had a marine biologist come on, and she was one of the most foremost marine biologists in the country. Her focus was jellyfish and venom and stuff from there as cures and blah, 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 blah. I don't know. I mean, I live in Hawaii. I see jellyfish, but I couldn't tell her what to say, but I could certainly help her on how to say it. And that's, you know, I had this argument with, a friendly argument, I should say.
Right.
Actually, the governor of Hawaii at the time, Linda Lingle. And I had said, you know, that I coach politicians and I coached this other governor. And I said, hey, you know, sometime, because we were friends and we were actually
right.
working on a project together. She said, I don't really need coaching, because I don't think that if you're telling people the truth, I don't think you need to be coached on how to do that. And I said,
oh.
I disagree with you. I think it's up to you to be telling the truth. I don't determine what the truth is. I assume that you're telling the truth. But it's one thing to tell the truth. It's another to be believed. And plenty of times, nerves or other things get in the way of that, and so then you don't look believable. And you may be, in fact, telling 100% God's honest truth, but people aren't buying it because you're blinking too much, or because you had a couple of drinks last night and your eyes are dry, or some other completely unrelated reason. And yeah, and so I think it is important to learn how to be believed. And I did end up coaching her after that. So.
Good job. You made the sale.
In fact, she played a part for me. She did a part in a play called Inherit the Wind.
Nice.
She was the mayor at the time. Oh. She was not the governor yet.
Okay.
She was the mayor of Maui County, and so she played the mayor in the play, which was kind of a coup for us.
Right. And maybe you were key in helping her get to the next level.
No, I doubt that, but I thank you for the compliment.
I don't know. I'm taking a stab at it.
I will say she was the first Republican governor in something like 40 or 50 years in Hawaii. So it was quite a surprise, I think, for a lot of people.
Well, and hopefully people who are listening to this podcast understand that when somebody's going for an election, they have to try to move their stance towards the middle just a little bit, closer to the middle, so they can try to capture more of the voting populace. So there is some in the election area. And for those in fitness...
I think the strategy is generally during the primaries, is you play to your base and you go farther and farther to your left or right, and then you're in a general election, you move more towards the center because you've got to appeal to more people.
Right, and I think people in the fitness area, they could take a cue from that when you're speaking to those people on your own media sources, so your YouTube channel that you've built around your ideas and, you know, your people that you've already built up around that, it's one thing to really hone in on what their needs are, but then when you start trying to tap into other markets, maybe a larger area, maybe you're out at a expo or you're out on stage, that's the time when you kind of have to really kind of draw back a little bit on how stiff you are on certain stances that you take, so that way you can maybe appeal to more people. And not that I don't think you should be dishonest about it. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that if you want more people to listen to you, you can't always come across so hard-nosed on certain things. You know, you wait till you find if they're interested in talking to you at all, and then you can start saying, hey, now that you've said you want me to be your coach or you're looking for help in this area, let me show you the secrets. You know, and you can kind of leave some of those harder stances down to the secrets of your system that you have as far as nutrition and health. And things like that. So you can maybe maintain a larger audience or a larger pool of people to draw from. And you know, I don't think this would be as big of a deal if we didn't live in such an age where our voice could have such a larger reach.
Mm-hmm. You know, a larger reach and a longer lasting reach.
Yes.
It stays out there, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's what makes your service as important than for the modern fitness guru or fitness consultant, is that they have to realize that they're no longer just talking to the group of meatheads in the gym. You know, when they're getting out online, they're talking to the whole world. And so how they come across can be important. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's not someone like me is in a position not to tell people what their message should be or to help them even create their message. That's their business. People like me are there simply to help them get their message out in a better way, in a more convincing way. And that's really, I mean, certainly for me, I'll speak for myself, that's my focus. That's what I've always been able to do well, is help people be believed. and they look and they say, oh, well, this is better. Yeah, this makes sense. This is what, you know, this person's telling me something true. And I just hope, and I try and associate with people that are, in fact, telling the truth rather than helping people lie better. I help to help them tell the truth better.
Right. Sometimes I find that there's this strange curve where I see people who are just getting into fitness. They seem to be very open, very honest, and not trying to be overly assertive. They're just very open and honest. But then there comes this point when they start to gain enough of a following where they begin to try to assert that they have authority in this area of expertise. And they begin to try to make this assertion, and it comes across really bad. I think it comes across really bad, at least the ways I've seen it done, is them asserting that authority doesn't ring as true as the person who maybe might have a smaller following, not as much knowledge, but who comes across maybe a bit more genuine.
I agree. Shakespeare, I think, said it best. He said, "Methinks thou dost protest too much." In other words, the more you try, the more you try to be, you know, believed or right, the more you look like you're trying, and the less people believe you. That's true.
There's a wider range of people that you can help with what you're doing, and do rates vary depending on what they're getting from you, or?
Honestly, they do a little bit. Because while acting is one thing, and those rates don't vary for actors, what I have to deal with different the amount of time that it's going to take and for me to get up to speed on what they do. So, for example, actually fitness or bodybuilder or something like that is actually pretty similar. In other words, if a bodybuilder wants specifically to work on making a video, well, that's pretty similar to an actor wanting to make, you know, a short film or a reel or something like that or an audition. And so that rate's going to be pretty much the same as an acting rate. But there are times when I'll work with an executive from a business or an attorney that is, or sometimes a military officers that are doing some sort of crisis management. And then everything is a little bit more important, you know,
right,
to all the players. And so consequently, yes, the price will go up simply because of the care that I have to take in helping them deliver their message.
That makes sense.
So, yeah, there's a sliding scale in that respect, but for most things, it's pretty affordable, I mean,
okay.
I think.
Right.
My rates are on my website for acting, and like I say, most of the people you're appealing to that listen to your show probably would fall into that rate.
Okay. You know? What's the process? Is there an application they have to fill out, or how do you select which people you end up coaching and which ones you don't?
I usually go with the best-looking ones. No, I'm kidding. I'm not terribly picky about it. I try and be, because I deal with honesty so much, I try and be honest with people. I have turned down many jobs simply because I don't feel that I can help them. And that's really the bottom line. If I think I can, frankly, be worth, you know, $100 or whatever I'm charging, then yeah, I'm going to tell them, hey, yeah, I can help you, and we can work on this. But usually I ask to see some information up front, I have a conversation with the person, and then I determine whether or not I think it's in our best interest to work together. Frankly, I would just as soon do a shorter session than a longer session. I don't think coaching, the kind of coaching that I do for this kind of stuff, should be more than one or two sessions, possibly three if it's a really important thing or whatever. I think there's enough work to justify it, but usually the vast majority is a one-session thing, and we knock it out, and that's that. So I'm not turning down people unless I feel like I honestly don't have a whole lot to offer them, and that's the case sometimes.
Yeah, I think one thing should be noted for, we do have a lot of beautiful people listening to the podcast, and many of them are already into the modeling area, getting pictures taken, and they might actually be really good at that, but I don't know if being really good at getting your picture taken is the same at being really good at being in front of the camera and speaking and trying to get your point across.
And it's not, and they are very, very different things. You do learn a lot. There are some things that are similar in terms of angles that are flattering and things like that that you do pick up, but what I find is people don't really realize, and I'm dealing more with actors, so in terms of, you know, giving a speech, that's one thing, but acting a role is another thing. And there's a lot of people that come out of bodybuilding or modeling or dancing or what have you, and they think, well, I can act, come on, how hard is that? and they're in for surprise, you know, they realize, oh, I have to cry, or oh, I have to look really angry, and actually, in a close-up, that means I have to actually be angry. And I have to do it 17 times in a row.
Right.
You know?
That's exhausting.
And, you know, the last ones are the ones that are actually going to be kept, and that counts. And those are the ones where you're not going to have anything left. So,
right.
You know, it's just like lifting or doing anything else. There's technique that helps you, and you learn that, and then you're able to perform, and that's what works best. So that's what I focus on, is trying to give them tools so that they can do what they need to when they need to, and repeatedly if necessary.
Being fit, a lot of people start to stare when you're out and about, and a lot of people start to look. And once you get to that physique, you know, that's when you start thinking maybe a bit more about taking it to a professional level. And I think that's the crux of when you need to begin to decide what kind of public persona you want. It's real easy, I think, for people to go overboard real quick, to become this larger-than-life characterization, and I don't know for the life of me how you keep that up. I can't imagine that can be a very easy way of living. So I think that's something people do need to start to think about when they're out and about, because there's this almost this expectation of, if this person has such this great physique, do they have a character that matches it? That is as bold and daring, maybe.
Right.
And that's kind of up to you, I guess. But I think in the beginning, especially with a lot of my clients who begin to want to do more with the physique they're building, they want to maybe start coaching or things like that. First thing I tell them is start to work on your posture. Because anytime you're in the gym, you're already supposed to be starting to form a good posture, because most of the lifts that you're doing require a fairly good posture already in order to support the lift. So first thing I start telling them is to try to make sure that your shoulders are down and back. Not that you're puffing your chest out abnormally, but that you just begin to try to allow, and it does help to have the muscles there to pull that posture into place, but to start looking like somebody who has something worth saying in life. You know, not always having your shoulders hunched forward and your head down, you know, but walk with a little bit of confidence.
Here's an interesting thing. I don't know if your listeners are motivated and want to check it out. There was an acting teacher many years ago named Michael Chekhov, not to be confused with his uncle, Anton Chekhov, the writer. Michael Chekhov was considered one of, if not the greatest actor of his day, a student of Stanislavski. And, in fact, Stanislavski said his greatest student. Chekhov had this technique that dealt with, things that are just being discovered now. There was a great talk on TED Talks or whatever it is on mm-hmm. TED Network that dealt with this, but they're just finding out scientifically that many of the things that Michael Chekhov preached are actually backed up by science. And so where this has to do with you is it has to do with actually with posing, what Chekhov called psychological gestures,
okay.
Which are poses that create changes internally in your body. And they couldn't do it then when he was alive, but now they've done tests, blood tests, and they find that these poses actually simply posing in this, mm-hmm. position, whatever position, for 30 seconds or so to a minute releases certain things, cortisol and certain things in your blood, way more when you do them. And so, and then they looked at the comparison to the animal kingdom, and one of the things that animals all have in common is that when they want to be formidable, when they want to, you know, intimidate others, they all do the same thing. They take up more space. They spread out. They get stand up straight. They spread their wings or their whatever they have.
Right. So the male peacocks spread their feathers to show the females that they're there. Yeah.
Right. All animals do this, and so when they do this with people, it tests that I think is the most effective, and I use with students all the time, is if you were to thrust both hands up in the air, really hard, straight up in the air.
Okay, I'm trying it.
What does that make you feel like?
A big monster?
Maybe. Or maybe like you just won a race.
Oh, okay, like straight up, straight up, okay.
Yeah, straight up, sorry, yeah. So straight up in the air, like a big victory, right?
Okay,
that's what people do, like every time they win a race, right? And one interesting fact on that was that blind children, when they do the Special Olympics and stuff, and they win their race, they do exactly the same thing.
Wow.
And yet they've never seen it.
Right.
But their arms go up in a victory sign. And if you do this, I mean, if your listeners do this sitting at home right now,
right.
When they're listening, just throw your hands up in the air. You actually feel, even within like a few seconds, you start to feel more positive. You start to feel good, victorious, strong. A lot of things that literally are coming to you simply because you did this pose. You took this posture. So what you were saying about, you know, your shoulders curving in and collapsing your chest and your head drops and things like that actually have physical, what's the word?
Maybe a chemical?
Causes. I mean, effects. They actually affect your body in a negative way, and you get more, I forget what it is, cortisol. I think.
Right.
One way or the other, it helps your stress or it hurts it. So when you do that curved thing and you drop your head and stuff, you get more stress in your body. And when you stand up straight and you do the other, then you eliminate more stress. So.
Right, and I think this is that's part of what's going to be attractive to other people if you're trying to show that you're an example of health. And that's what people are buying from you is health and vitality. They want, if you're selling that, if that's what you're selling, you need to kind of start to emulate what someone with health and vitality looks like. And that's not, depressed and sad but it's confident. Yeah. It's confident and strong.
Yeah. That's interesting. I hadn't thought of that, but there's something that relates to both acting and everything, life.
Right. I hope you can give us a few of those articles or whatever in the show notes. If you can send me those links, I'll put them in the show notes for people so they can look into the actor a little bit, check off. And maybe if you have that link for the TED Talk, that'd be great to get into the show notes.
Yeah, I think I do. I can find those. Sure, absolutely.
Great.
I'll share those with you.
Great. Scott, I really appreciate you taking the time to come on today. I think
my pleasure.
Yeah, the information we shared, I think, is going to be great for people, and hopefully they get a chance to visit your website. I think it's scottrogersstudios.com. It'll be in the show notes. So go over and give a shout-out to Scott and see if there's any way you guys can help each other out, and I'm sure he'll be willing to respond to you. Guys, keep your head up.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, definitely. Keep your head up. Keep your shoulders back. And live strong and prosper.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Union Podcast. Please stay tuned for a message from the Union. I want to take a moment to thank our athletes. Our athletes are those who have taken the bull by the horns to lift strong and prosper. They, out of their own pockets, pay to get this podcast off the ground. Pay to keep it going. They do this not through any direct donation, but they participate in our programs. They have union-sponsored coaches that help them train to lift strong and prosper. So I wanted to give a shout-out to all of our union athletes. Thank you for making this podcast possible, so that way all our members throughout the whole world can listen. To become a union athlete, go to www.theunionofmuscle.com and click on the athlete page. There you will find an application. Fill it out and dues apply for athletes. But it's our athletes, once again, those dues that they're paying are keeping this podcast going. Lift strong and prosper, everyone. Do you compete in bodybuilding physique or bikini and are not yet sponsored? The Union of Muscle can help. With our union-sponsored competitor fund, join other highly effective, value-building competitors and share in the success. Go to www.unionofmuscle.com and click on the union-sponsored competitor tab. For more information, join the union. Okay, all you beautiful fitness freaks, geeks, and athletes, don't forget to like us on Facebook, subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, sign up for free membership in the Union of Muscle, help our union-sponsored athletes by donating to their fund, and lift strong and prosper. Do you have a question or comment regarding this episode, or a request for future episodes? Go to theunionpodcast.com. and comment on this episode's forum or any other. And make sure to leave your positive reviews for us on iTunes. Thank you. Do you have a great idea for a podcast or think you can do a fitness podcast better? Go to www.fullservicepodcasts.com. That's podcasts with an S. Get as much or as little help as you need creating and hosting podcasts on iTunes and on the internet. That's www.fullservicepodcasts.com. Congratulations, all you fitness freaks, geeks, and athletes. By listening to this entire podcast, you get a union membership free. Simply go to www.unionofmuscle.com and click on the union membership registration form. Now, as a member of the Union of Muscles, you get updates on this podcast, as well as the ability to earn points for staying fit. I call these points Fitcoin. You can earn Fitcoin by tracking your fitness, getting fitness certifications, participating in team events, or going on union raids, and so much more. Track your success on the Union Leaderboard, where you can compete with other union members, athletes, for top placement in a fearsome competition of fitness. Would you like to be a guest on our podcast? Go to theunionofmuscle.com and go to the Contact Us page. There you will find an application for guest speakers. You have been listening to the Union Podcast. All rights are reserved by the content's creators.